Hi, I'm Keegan.
And I'm Madigan.
And you're listening to Your Angry Neighborhood Feminist. This is a podcast where we examine the world through our personal feminist perspectives. And I feel like a broken record, but I just know that the first time we don't do this is going to be the first time somebody listens and they're going to be like, they got all this stuff wrong. And it's like, so I need to give this disclaimer that these are mostly our, it's an opinion-based podcast.
We try.
And I feel like we do a pretty good job.
Yeah, but sometimes, it's not like we don't do, like, any research at all. And then are just like, fuck it, let's just talk. Which, I mean, I guess, like, in some parts we are like that.
Yeah, those are the parts that are going to get us in trouble. I'm not worried about, like, the, like, book the report notes. Stuff.
Yeah.
Because I'm like, that we've done our homework on.
Yeah.
But if we just go off about something and have a rant and we get something wrong, let us know. Call us in on it.
Yeah, and, you know.
Be nice about it.
That's what editing is for, too.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. This week, we will be discussing Black Trailblazers. Mm-hmm. So, women who kind of came in and shook up the game, changed the game for Black women in society. And we're going to do it kind of like book report style, like we did for the Rosa Parks Claudette Colvin episode. I just love doing them that way.
Mm-hmm. So much fun. And next week, we will have a similar setup where we will talk about Black women who made a difference in the feminist movement.
Yes, Black feminists for the last week of Black History Month, which I think is appropriate. It has been a lovely Black History Month.
I've enjoyed it. I actually really, really love doing these episodes. Like,
me too.
They're some of my favorites. I got so into this week's. It's been crazy.
Yeah, yeah. I've been enjoying it too. Okay, so we just want to jump right in?
Yeah.
Okay.
We both want to go first. I know.
I
want to go first so bad.
Okay, you go first next time because you went first last time.
I know.
Okay.
Well, I'm so excited.
Let me get out my notes. You hear that?
Paper. I was almost late because I was trying to, like, type everything out on my computer and then send it to my iPad.
I tried to be concise, but then I'd learn something new and I'd be like, oh, yeah, put that in.
Yeah.
And I'd be like, oh, well, you gotta
put that in. That's why I wrote everything down on, like, graph paper,
mm-hmm.
and I had literally 7 pages of notes, and then I went back and, like, highlighted as I went, like, what was the background?
What was this? Yeah.
And then also what's important, because I watched so many, like, little short, like, documentaries or, like, read all these articles with, like, conflicting things, too, where I'm just like, fuck, wait, what's the right one
again?
Yeah,
then you have to, like, fact check.
Mm-hmm. Lots of highlighting, lots of purple and blue Sharpie. I don't know why I love writing in Sharpie so much, but there's something
satisfying. It's satisfying. Yeah, it really is. Yeah. Well, I feel like I should also give the disclaimer that I'm not drinking wine today. I feel like I owe our audience that they should know that.
I mean, she's drinking vodka.
I am drinking a Bloody Mary. It's medicine. It's not a fun cocktail. It is a medicinal cocktail to help me recover because...
From last night's cocktails.
Yes. Yeah. I don't know what's
You've
wrong with me.
You've been hungover for a few episodes.
Well, no. I was hungover the one episode that we did not air.
Oh.
But I haven't been hungover since we've been recording, but I just, like... And I wasn't even really hungover. It was just a very disorienting experience this morning because I woke up in bed in the clothes I was wearing last night with my makeup on. Don't know if I brushed my teeth. My Invisalign was not in my mouth, which is a big deal. You shouldn't leave them out for that long. And I don't know.
That's crazy.
So no wine for me.
I've never even gotten close to that. That's insane to me.
It's like
if I'm drunk the night before, I cannot drink alcohol at all.
Bloody Marys help me. They actually do help me.
I don't like Bloody Marys. I don't like tomatoes. I mean, I like ketchup. I like sun-dried tomatoes. I do not like raw tomatoes of any kind or tomato juice.
I don't like tomato juice, but I like Bloody Marys. It's a weird thing.
You're a weird person.
I like, what are those ones with beer, too? I don't know. They're like a Bloody Mary with beer instead of vodka.
Those are good, too. I don't like beer.
Okay, so since we've rambled for, like, a full 5 minutes.
And we've talked about how male listeners don't like that.
They don't like it.
But whatever, I don't care.
They do not like it. We covered pens, we covered hangovers. So I think we're ready to get into it.
I'm ready. I mean, we almost started and then we stopped, so we should probably start.
Yeah, we gave them a tease.
Yeah. Mm. We were like, oh, we're going to talk about it.
Honestly, we should just put in our show notes, like, look, if you don't like it, skip to this minute.
That's what I was thinking. Yeah. That's a good idea. I like it. I dig it.
Yeah, we should do that.
All right.
Okay.
Go. I'm ready. Who are you going to teach me about?
Mine is a secret. my Black feminist of the week is Sojourner Truth. Do you know anything about Sojourner Truth?
tell me, and I might, because something about the name is ringing a bell, but I don't know what bells it's ringing.
I feel like she often got confused. Look, teachers are, like, Russian to get in all the black history.
I thought you were just trying to say that teachers are Russian.
No. Rushing without the G, with an apostrophe. They are Russian to get all of the black history in 1 month, I feel like.
In 28 days.
In 28, yeah. Let's be clear. It is 28 days.
Well, I was going to say we should have an extra week of Black History Month, but then that's Women's History Month.
Yeah, I know. They do that on purpose, so you can't linger on one for too long. Yeah.
Fucking shit on us the whole time.
I know. Yeah. Fucking patriarchy. Okay. Yeah, but I feel like they try to cram in so much that I feel like Sojourner Truth oftentimes gets mixed up and confused with Harriet Tubman. And they did not do remotely the same thing.
Well, tell me about her, and I'm going to let you know if the bells start ringing in my head.
Okay. Just ding, 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 whenever.
Ding, 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 okay. Ding, ding.
Okay, Sojourner Truth was born Isabella Bomfrey to James Bomfrey, a slave who was captured from modern-day Ghana, and Elizabeth, I loved this, also known as Mau Mau Bet, which I'm like, ooh, Mau Mau, like M-A-U, M-A-U.
Mau
Mau. Mau Mau.
That sounds like a good cat name.
Yeah, I like it. Oh, my next cat should
like
be Mau
Mau. Like Mau Mau, Mau Mau.
Yeah. Who was the daughter of slaves from Guinea. The Bomfreys were originally owned by Dutch-American Colonel Johannes Hardenberg. I wrote, fun fact, the way I wrote this is really confusing to me. Isabella and the Bomfreys did not speak English during this time, only Dutch, as that was the language of their master, which I thought was interesting. However, when she was sold at the age of 9, along with a flock of sheep for $100...
Wait, the daughter was...
Yeah,
Isabella. Isabella. Was sold, not the whole family, just Isabella.
Right.
With sheep.
So what happened was, and I didn't include everything in this, but I guess that guy died. Johannes.
Got it.
Died. And then his slaves changed hands and went to his son, because they were property. And then something happened with his son. I don't know if he died or what happened, but then they switched hands again, or the estate was sold.
Okay.
And so the family was sold and split up. So
what the fuck?
Yeah,
that sucks.
Yeah.
No, I know it happened. I know it happened a lot. I'm not like naive to that, but it just like it always kind of makes me mad.
Yeah, it's really, really sad. Because, I mean, this is a 9-year-old child.
Yeah.
I've actually seen conflicting reports whether or not it was 9 or 11.
It's still,
Either way,
it's still, yeah.
And to be sold with a flock of sheep.
Yeah.
For $100 is devastating.
Oofity oof.
Yeah. So she switched hands several times.
Uh-huh.
Which sounds weird because it makes me feel like I'm talking about a chair.
Mm-hmm.
But she did switch owners several times before ultimately becoming the property of a particularly harsh slave owner named John Dumont. And she actually did a lot of writing about that period of time in her life and about experiencing sexual abuse, of course, a lot of physical abuse.
Yeah.
She actually fell in love with a slave who he would not allow her to marry. So, yeah, and instead, like, forced her to marry someone else.
Yeah.
You know?
Remind me what year this is again.
Well, she was born in... Why don't I have the year she was born in? So I think she was born in, like, the late 1700s, the 1790s.
Okay.
So we're talking, at this point, we're probably heading into 1810s, 18...
Okay. All right.
That's all speculation.
It's fine. I just wanted somewhat of, like, a mental picture in
yes.
my head.
We're pre-Civil War.
Got it.
In New York, whenever slavery was still legal in New York.
Right.
At this time. In 1827, after her master failed to honor his promise to free her or to uphold the New York anti-slavery law of 1827, Isabella ran away, or, as she later informed her master, "I did not run away. I walked away by daylight." She was badass as fuck.
No.
She was like, excuse me. I did not run away. I walked away by daylight. And she managed to escape with her infant daughter, Sophia, but had to leave her other two children behind.
Was Sophia born from her master, or was Sophia born and her other children born from the slave she was in love with?
Not the slave she was in love with, but the slave she was forced to marry.
Oh, yeah. Got it.
She had, like, 5 children with him, but I know she had, like, 13 children total, so...
Holy. I just remember learning about that in college, where they would talk about, like, how... Again, I think this would kind of be a colorism thing as well, how, like, even if a slave owner was the father of, like, a slave child, they would kind of, like, disown it because it was still mm-hmm. the child was still, like, black.
Well, a lot of times what they would do, as we see with, like, Sally Hemings, who... Do you know who Sally Hemings is?
I do.
Well, she was the mistress of Thomas Jefferson.
Yeah.
I can't believe I just said that. She was not his mistress. I don't like that people use that kind of language.
Right. But it's because, it is a common way for people to understand what it is.
To understand what, like, the relationship is, but you cannot have a consenting relationship with, one, a 14-year-old, which is when he started sleeping with her, or two, a slave.
No, that's not,
it's rape.
Rape,
you know?
Sure.
Yeah. But it doesn't matter what her feelings later became. You know, people get Stockholm syndrome all the time.
Exactly. That's how it started.
Yeah.
Well, it's just interesting because I remember learning something about, like, the drop of blood rule, where it's like, if your blood is...
You're black.
All black.
Yeah. The one drop rule. But the things that they would do, though, like, that's what happened in that case. So I don't know if a lot of people know this, but Sally Hemings was actually Thomas Jefferson's wife's sister. Yeah.
Wait a second. Explain that to me.
So, Thomas Jefferson's wife.
Yeah.
Her father.
Uh-huh.
Had sex with a slave, or raped a slave. And Sally Hemings is his daughter. So, Thomas Jefferson was...
sleeping with his wife's...
sister.
Biological sister.
Right. But she was...
whatever.
I mean, obviously she wasn't claimed in that way.
No.
But she still... But a lot of times what they would do was move them into the house. Whenever they, like, moved their children into the house, they would become house slaves. Partially because, one, as we talked about last week in the hair episode, it was partially because they thought that lighter skin and everything that went along with that, looser hair, all of those things.
They were easier to be tamed.
Easier to be tamed.
Yeah.
Smarter, more reliable. They attributed those features to those traits.
Right.
So they would have them, like, live in the house with them.
Yeah.
I don't know if Sojourner Truth's children, if any of them were...
She had to leave.
But
that must have been hard to just have to, like, separate
leave your
children.
Yeah, and that comes up later.
Okay.
I don't know what happened to one of her children. So she took Sophia, and then she had a daughter and a son, a 5-year-old son who was there. Don't know what happened to the daughter.
Okay.
But shortly after her escape, Truth learned that her son Peter, then 5 years old, had been illegally sold to a man in Alabama. She took the issue to court and eventually secured Peter's return from the South. The case was one of the first in which a black woman successfully challenged a white man in United States court.
Totally.
That is insane.
That's...
Like, just think about the balls it would take, or the ovaries that it would take to do that. You know what I mean? Like, that would, at that time, that's crazy that she could have done that. It's crazy that the courts...
even listened.
Listened
and, slam a door in their,
and
in her
upheld
face.
That. Because, I mean, technically she was right. That law... was no longer in place. There was an anti-slavery law in New York, so he had no right to
be
sell
sold
anybody.
To somebody in Alabama.
Right, yeah.
Even though slavery would have still been legal in Alabama,
it was
correct?
Legal in Alabama, but it was not legal in New York.
Well,
so
that's
you
what I'm saying.
That,
it's like it's still, like, even though you're selling to a place where it's still legal, like, it's still not legal from the place that you're selling.
Yeah, but I mean, this sort of thing happened all the time. Like, 12 years a slave, that's what happened to him. He was a free man who was, like, captured and sold into slavery in the South. But I can't even imagine the guts that it would take.
Yeah.
She's one of the most, like, brave, courageous women in history, I feel like, to do something like that.
And so smart.
Yeah. After rescuing her son, she became a traveling preacher and changed her name to Sojourner Truth, which I just love that. I love the way that sounds.
How
Sojourner
do you spell
Truth?
Sojourner?
Sojourner. So it's Sojourner.
It's
like a journeyman.
I was
you know?
Just gonna say it sounds like journey.
Yeah, because she was a traveling preacher. So
yeah.
She was.
And she was
journeying and telling the truth. You know what I mean?
I just love that.
Isn't that great?
How beautiful is that?
And beautiful to give yourself a name.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And decide. I kind of love the agency taking ownership over.
Yeah.
Like what that represents, kind of taking ownership over your life. Okay, so she changed her name to Sojourner Truth and was soon working alongside abolitionists such as Frederick Douglass. For both the freedom of slaves, and she was one of the first people to really start pushing and advocating for women's suffrage.
Love it.
So she was not only a black rights activist, and she was also a women's rights activist and a very loud proponent for women's rights.
Well, that's what's amazing is that, like, a lot of times women would be women's advocates, but they would kind of forget the race part and would be very racist, which we I think we touched on in the Women's March episode a little bit.
And we will talk about the first week of Women's History Month when we cover suffrage. And on that same hand, like, when we're discussing that, women were left out of the Black rights movement as well, like the civil rights movement.
Yeah.
You know, so.
Well, yeah, Rosa Parks was being told to be a secretary instead of being treated as the powerful person she is.
Specifically in this time, pre-Civil War era. Well, I mean, all the way through, but specifically in this time, it was just like people who lived or existed in those intersections of being both a woman and a Black woman were being left out of conversations for women's suffrage, and they were also being left out of conversations for Black freedom and abolition.
Yeah.
You know, so it was kind of like she was the OG, intersectional feminist. Was just like, look, man, I exist in both of these identities, and I'm not going to be forced to pick which liberation I want. You know
what
I mean?
Or to even choose to be left out of them. Like, she's going to do something about being a part of it.
Right.
And not stand for being a bystander.
Right. Truth focused most of her energy on the plight of Black women who were often ignored in the women's suffrage movement and who she feared abolitionists would forget after Black men received their freedom and the right to vote. So she was just like,
That's great. We're here.
Hi.
I love it.
It was in 1851 at the Ohio Women's Rights Convention in Akron, which I love that there was a Women's Rights Convention
in Akron,
1851. Where Truth would deliver her now famous Ain't I a Woman speech.
That's how I know her.
Yeah. That discussed the hypocrisy of so-called male chivalry that was used as an excuse to keep women from voting. She pointed out that while men claimed that women were delicate and needed to be given special care due to their so-called nature, she was never offered such courtesies and was strong and not delicate.
Yeah.
And yet was still considered a woman. This pointed out that not only were Black women treated less courteously than white women were in terms of chivalry, but that the idea that women's very nature was a delicate one was nonsense because she was clearly a woman from her ability to bear children and cry with a mother's grief over their loss, yet was as strong as any man. And I just love that she gave this speech because she gave it also to a lot of white women in the crowd. She was addressing both issues at the same time. So she was talking to white women to say, like, you're fighting for something, but ain't I a woman too? Like, I'm a woman too, and you need to be fighting for my freedom too, because they didn't want to do that. They thought it was too too much to try and take on at one time. And then also speaking to the men in the room who were, I think she was actually talking to the men in the room because they were trying to, like, chime in at a women's conference, of course. They were man-terrupting that entire conference and trying to say, well, we just want to treat you like women. We want to give you the best of everything. We want to, you know, be able to, like, open doors for you. And
we don't care what you think.
And she's like, excuse me, I've been, like, working in the fields picking cotton. You've been, like, beating me up basically my entire life.
You're going to open doors for me, really?
But, and I'm a woman too. Yeah.
Yeah.
So I love that. Even in abolitionist circles, some of Truth's opinions were considered radical. She sought political equality for all women and chastised the abolitionist community for failing to seek civil rights for Black women as well as men. She openly expressed concern that the movement would fizzle after achieving victories for Black men, leaving both white and Black women without suffrage or any other key political rights. During the Civil War, Truth recruited Black troops for the Union Army, and on more than one occasion met Abraham Lincoln to speak out about her beliefs and life experience. Truth continued to agitate for change even after the Emancipation Proclamation.
To agitate?
Yeah, that's it.
Oh.
She was an agitator.
Oh. Okay. I was like, wait, was that a typo?
No.
Sorry. Continue.
No.
I'm sorry. My bad.
Truth continued to agitate for change even after the Emancipation Proclamation. Even trying to force the desegregation of streetcars in Washington by intentionally riding in cars designated for whites. So she was going hard all the time. Like, she was just, like, never stopping. Like, which I think is just, like, such a great model that we should model our lives after. Like, she's just like, there's always something else. Like, you might have given the Emancipation Proclamation, but guess what? We still have segregated streetcars. What's up with that?
Yeah.
I'm gonna ride in those streetcars over there. You know what I mean? I'm going to do what
it.
I want because I deserve as much freedom as anybody else.
Yeah.
But she was also taking on such tremendous risk doing these things. Like, in the North, she's making herself such an incredible target.
Oh, yeah.
You know, so I just think that's super, super bomb.
Mm-hmm.
Until old age intervened, Truth continued to speak passionately on the subjects of women's rights, universal suffrage, and prison reform. So she was truly, like I said, just like...
just always looking for the next thing that could
and,
be better.
And so intersectional. Like, she's just like, I don't just want freedom for me. I want freedom for all people. Yeah. And if you're unfree, you know, then I can't be truly free.
I mean, what a forward way of thinking. I feel like for a lot of people, it's like they don't think of the way that others live until it's like exposed to them, like until you've met someone or until you've seen a show.
Or until it affects them personally.
Right. Know? Until, or even if it's just, yeah, if they know somebody or have seen something that has moved them is when they start, which is fine. Like, I think that if that's, whatever it takes for you to get to that point, I think it's great. For me, I know that's how a lot of things that I've learned about, it's been a very personal thing mm-hmm. that's happened to me. So the fact that she's able to, like...
Well, I think when you've experienced such incredible injustice that she experienced, I think your eyes are more open to see injustice everywhere.
Yeah.
So it's not just... She didn't have to go to prison.
Prison reform is, like, something that it's, like, amazing to me that she was able to, like, recognize.
Well, prison...
is something that's still not very
prisons
recognized.
Were highly racist. They still are.
Yeah.
But at that time, they were super, super racist. It was, you know, I mean, if you've watched 13th, it was another form of slavery, essentially. Yeah. Like, so they could arrest black people for doing anything.
Yeah.
So I'm sure that was part of it for her. Yeah. But, yeah, I think once you've experienced just such incredible... injustice that you see it everywhere and you want to put a stop to it everywhere.
I think that's great.
She was also an outspoken opponent of capital punishment, testifying before the Michigan State Legislature against the practice. Sojourner Truth died in her home in Battle Creek, Michigan on November 26, 1883, and she is buried alongside her family at Battle Creek's Oak Hill Cemetery. Fun fact.
Another one.
Fun fact numero dos. Sojourner Truth was friends with Susan B. Anthony and collaborated with her until her death in 1883.
Love it.
And all of this information, I did double check information from several different sources to make sure that they were as correct as possible. So I got all of this information from NPS.gov, which is the National Park Service. The Odyssey.
That's interesting.
Yeah, I think that they have a park, like there's a park. Like,
that's cool.
The Odyssey Online and biography.com. And I do have Sojourner Truth's Ain't I a Woman speech here.
That give it.
I will read for you now. I watched a video of Kerry Washington doing this speech. I'm not going to try and do it like her because she did it so freaking well.
But that's, as an actress, you should know.
Yeah, I should try and find...
It has to be your own personal... experience of it.
Yeah, well, I'm not going to perform it in that way for this podcast, but I will try and find it and share it either to the Facebook page, or if I can find parts of it, we can maybe share it to Instagram. So I'll see. Okay, so Sojourner Truth. Oh, this says she was born in 1797.
There you go.
So Sojourner Truth, Ain't I a Woman, delivered 1851 at the Women's Rights Convention in Akron, Ohio. Well, children... where there is so much racket, there must be something out of kilter. I think that twixt the Negroes of the South and the women of the North, all talking about rights, the white men will be in a fix pretty soon. But what's all this here talking about? That man over there says that women need to be helped into carriages and lifted over ditches and to have the best place everywhere. Nobody helps me into carriages or over mud puddles or gives me any best place. And ain't I a woman? Look at me. Look at my arm. I have plowed and planted and gathered into barns, and no man could head me. And ain't I a woman? I could work as much and eat as much as a man when I could get it, and bear a lash as well, and ain't I a woman? I have borne 13 children and seen most all sold off to slavery, and when I cried out with my mother's grief, none but Jesus heard me, and ain't I a woman? Then they talk about this thing in the head. What's this they call it? Intellect. That's it, honey. What's that got to do with women's rights or Negroes' rights? If my cup won't hold but a pint and yours holds a quart, wouldn't you be mean not to let me have a little half measure full? Then that little man in the black there, he says women can't have as much rights as men because Christ wasn't a woman. Where did your Christ come from? Where did your Christ come from? From God and a woman. Man had nothing to do with him. If the first woman God ever made was strong enough to turn the world upside down all alone, These women here together ought to be able to turn it back and get it right side up again. And now, they is asking to do it. The men better let them. Obliged to you for hearing me. And now old Sojourner ain't got nothing more to say. Isn't she fantastic?
Oh, I like just closing my eyes and just like living that for a minute. That was beautiful.
She's a truly like badass lady of history who did so much for women's rights and black rights. And I love her.
I love her too. Let's see. We have Grandma Rosa. We have Auntie Claudie. And can she be Godmama?
Yeah.
Godmama Shrews?
Yeah, I like that. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I like it too. And this will be our sister.
Hey there, listeners. Keegan here. Did you know that our girl Madigan is coming out with her own adult coloring book? The Inappropriate Coloring Book is chock full of feminist slogans, curse words, and potty humor, all framed by Madigan's awesome hand-drawn designs. The full book isn't available just yet, but if you'd like to purchase individual prints or just check out what's to come, follow the Instagram page at The Inappropriate Coloring Book or check out her Etsy page at etsy.com/shop/bemoreinappropriate.
Today, I'm here to talk about a woman who I adore, named Saria Bonnelly. And love is Bonnelly. Bonnelly, she's French. I'm going to say Bonnelly.
We got to stop doing French things. I don't know.
I had to look it up, and Chris was like, what are you listening to? Because I kept looking how to say certain French names. Mm-hmm. She's amazing. So I'm going to try to get through this as quickly as I can, because I have a lot of information, but I'm sure we'll get through it. Saria Bonnelly was born Claudine in Nice, France, in December 15th, 1973.
She was born Claudine?
No, her name was Claudine when she was born.
Oh. Oh.
So this is the thing. So she was adopted at 18 months by her parents, Suzanne, and it looks like George's, but I guess it's like Jorge.
Yeah, probably. Sounds right.
And they renamed her Saria, which is S-U-R-Y-A. Kind of sounds like Syria when I'm talking, but it's Saria.
Okay.
To make her sound more exotic, her parents and coaches, who one of her coaches was her mom. Her mom was like a PE teacher turned figure skating coach or something like that. Mm-hmm. They started telling people that she was actually born on the island of Réunion, which looks like Reunion, which is near Madagascar. It wasn't until Saria was 18 that she discovered her real birthplace.
What the hell?
Yeah.
That's really fucked up.
It's super fucked up. Well, because they wanted to play off of her, like,
yeah, that's being also exotic. Fucked up. It's are her parents super white?
I think they're lighter skinned. I can't remember if they're white or not, but I think they are. They're definitely, she's very dark skinned.
Yeah, she is very dark skinned. So, I've seen her. But
yeah, they're definitely, yeah, I think they might be white. I can't remember. I know I saw a photo and I'm not really remembering if they were maybe like mixed race or something. But she actually started out as a gymnast, and she skated a bit, and she was kind of, like, she was at, like, a, like, national level of gymnastics. Like, she was winning shit and, like, doing really, really good. And then when she got older, she kind of had to, like, choose a lane to take, and she wanted to be a figure skater. She loved skating the most. And at the age of 11, she started solely figure skating, and within 2 years, she was competing on international events, and even won bronze at the 1989 Junior Worlds. Within two
and
years.
And how old is she? Sorry.
She would have been 13 when that happened.
Okay, wow.
She was, like, a trailblazer. She was landing jumps at 13 that girls wouldn't even attempt at that time.
Mm-hmm. Well, her gymnastics background probably really helped her with that.
Oh, yeah, for real. Mm-hmm. But you'll see later how it also hindered her. So the next year, she placed second behind Japan's Yuko Sato, a judge favorite. Saria believed that she was scored unfairly by the judges, and she actually refused to stand on the podium at the medal ceremony. When her name was called, she tearfully took off her medal and the crowd booed her, and the media tore her apart. She, and I'll talk more about this later too, but she was seen as being too muscular. She skated like a gymnast, they would say.
Right, yeah.
And they didn't like that. Again, I'll get to that later because it's a whole other can of worms. But first I want to talk about her labeling. There was a common theme in all the articles and all the videos that I watched. They all included words like rebellious and bad girl. While some may have seen her this way and found it empowering, I believe that if a white girl had attempted these things she did, the media would use adjectives like brave or unique or go-getter.
Yeah, absolutely.
Everything was like even So I'm going to talk about a documentary that Retta did, the woman from Parks and Recreation.
Love her.
She was a huge fan of Sarah Bonnelly when she was growing up. And it's called Rebel on Ice. Mm-hmm. All of them, the bad girl of skating, the rebel, the blah, you know, it's all very, like, while it could be seen as positive, I feel like for a lot of people, a rebel and a bad girl is commonly seen as negative, especially, like, in the late 90s.
Well, I feel like it's kind of similar. I feel like these are issues of race and class.
That,
you know,
exactly.
Because I feel like it's the same kind of language and mentality that was used about Tonya Harding. You know what
I mean?
Well,
and that's the thing is that, and Tonya Harding and Saria had a lot of similarities where they were built very similarly. Mm-hmm. They were shorter, they were stockier, they had muscle, they were jumpers.
They skated artistic. They skated athletically.
But at the same time, and this is something that I will argue anybody, I believe that Saria was definitely more athletic than Tonya Harding ever was. The only issue she had that Scott Hamilton brought up when she skated at the Olympics was that she would pause her choreography before a jump. You knew she was going for a jump. But at the same time, you see that all the time. Mm-hmm. When I was learning a jump, I would have elaborate setups before because your body needs to be used to a certain muscle memory to get into it. So even the setup can help you.
Well, and correct me if I'm wrong, but I think I've seen some of her jumps, and she did, like, flips and stuff.
Well, that's what she's known for. She's known for the Bonnelly. So we're going to, this and then, she's a trailblazer, girl. We're going to get there. So, Saria was different than many of her fellow skaters. She was the first woman to attempt a quad toe loop in Worlds in 1991. For those who don't know, a quad is four turns in the air, typically only done by men. This year in the Olympics, there is a woman attempting a triple axel from the U.S. Mm-hmm. There's been very few. Tonya Harding was the first woman to ever land a triple axel in U.S. competition. And very, very rare. So for a woman to be attempting a quad jump is huge. Mm-hmm. We've got some people doing it now, but again, this is in the early 90s. And she was the first woman to be doing this. She also rarely wore tights when she skated, which sounds painful, because they didn't make tights that were her skin color. And I wrote, in fact, I can only ever remember one color of tights being sold at dress shops and competitions because that's where I would get them. You know, I'd go to competition and buy, you know, stock up on tights.
I love that she's badass enough to be like, oh, you don't make my color, then I'm just not going to wear them.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But again, this was another reason for judges to be like, this is not what we accept.
That seems such bullshit, though. Why does it matter?
It's total bullshit, and it's because they wanted to find reasons to score her unfairly. And you'll see more and more of this as I go on. Oh, and I just wrote, I hope that that's improved since I was younger. Saria is also the only person, not woman, not black skater, but person to land a backflip on one foot.
Yeah, that's what I've seen. I've seen her do that, which also sounds painful, let me tell you.
Yep. And that is where the real controversy begins.
Yeah.
So
it's an illegal move, right?
It's illegal. So at a young age, Saria admired Norbert Schramm, or Schramm. Schramm?
No.
Schramm. The only European who could do a backflip. Since Schramm was a friend of Saria's coach,
You mean a backflip on ice?
A backflip on ice.
Okay,
yes.
I was like, in
Sorry.
General?
No,
backflip on ice. The only person in Europe?
He was good! And she has such a long history of gymnastics that she began to learn the skill herself. This brought a lot of negativity from fellow skaters, coaches, and parents, where they were like, this is not okay. They said it was unsafe to do this at practice. So a rule was made pretty universally that if you were going to land a jump on ice, it had to be on one foot.
What?
Because they didn't think you could do it. So when she began to show, but she could do it. She was amazed. She would do kind of like a layout position and land on one foot. When she began to show off her new move at practice sessions and ice shows, the skating world did not respond to it well. Saria says, some thought it was my technique to distract the skaters. And then she kind of goes like she kind of scoffs, like, whatever. Sports journalist and commentator Christine Brennan, you should watch the documentary Rebel on Ice by Retta, because this chick pisses me off the entire time with how blatantly discriminatory she is toward her. Like, you can tell that this chick is probably a Trump supporter.
Ew.
Just kind of a racist bitch. Like, I mean, just the way that she...
Is she American or is she French?
Yeah, no, she's American. She's an American journalist, and just the wording she used was just very, very negative. And I talk about her a little bit more, or I use a few more of her quotes. But she basically is like, okay, so she goes, said that Saria was doing the backflip for the media right in the face of Olympic favorite Yuko Sato. She announced herself, and not in a good way.
Who cares who she's doing it for?
Exactly.
What does it matter?
Oh, I'm sorry. Am I doing my backflip too close to your perfect little...
Yeah, to me that doesn't make any... That makes no sense to criticize someone. Because it doesn't matter.
But they did that because there was no way they were going to give her that. They weren't going to be like, wow, what an amazing thing you can do. And in ice shows and stuff, you can do whatever you want. I mean, I've seen a million ice shows of people doing backflips, and it's amazing. And that's what she was known for.
And that really flies in the face of this, like, competitive spirit that I feel like happens in sports. Why would you be concerned about your competitor in that way? You're not concerned that you can do something that they can't do. Why would you be like, don't do that in front of her. She can't do that. That's rude.
Exactly. But like, because they wanted to protect the artistry, they wanted to maintain that as being the norm. Mm-hmm. And she wasn't the norm, and she liked not being the norm. She was like, I can be pretty and I can do this. There's a quote that I have written somewhere in here. She was like, I can be pretty and I can jump. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like, she knew that she had it going on. So, this brings us to the 1998 Olympics in Nagano. Saria had been recovering from an Achilles injury for the last 2 years and was placed sixth after her short program, which Saria believed was underscored by the judges. When she stepped on the ice in a beautiful, angelic-looking powder blue dress, she had, like, designers doing her dresses for her. They were gorgeous. She didn't really skate her best. She fell. She kind of under-rotated some jumps. She just, like, was not on her game. Before her last planned jump at the program, she's at one end of the ice, and she kind of flashes this smile, and she's skating backwards really, really fast. And Scott Hamilton was the commentator who can do a backflip with 2 feet, and he sees what she's going for. And he's like, oh, she's going to do a backflip, and she does it. And holy shit, the crowd, like,
went insane,
freaked out, and like they're clapping along to her music with the beat, and then she just like flies into that last spin, and she finishes, and she puts her arms up, and her back is to the judges, and she's like, thank you, audience,
good
for loving me. You know, I like, again, I get goosebumps all the time when I talk about this shit. And she just like, she just gets off, and she sits in a little kiss and cry, and her mom is there. Her mom gives her a big kiss. Her coach is hugging her. They're all like so happy. And then they pan the audience, and everyone's like, they're sitting and like turning behind in their seats, talking to the people around them, like, oh my God, what are they going to do? What are they going to do? Because it's illegal. And by doing that, she knew that she could have been disqualified. But she also knew that that would be her last competition because she'd been struggling with an injury, and it was her time.
She wanted to go out with
a bang. So she was like, fuck all of this. Like, if I'm not going to win the Olympics, I'm going to leave my mark. So, well, what they did is the jump just wasn't counted, but that still hurt her because then she didn't do all the necessary elements.
She didn't place.
She was eighth after the program, and I don't remember how she placed finally. I didn't look it up. I just remember seeing that they were like, after the long program, she's eighth. Notorious coach of skaters like Michelle Kwan and Gracie Gold quoted saying, there were probably some coaches that didn't like Saria because she was fast and got in the way of skaters. Which to that I say, boo freaking who?
Yeah, get out the way or keep up.
Yeah, exactly.
You know what I mean? Like, this is the nature of competition.
Exactly. But he also stated that he overheard judges commenting on her difference in body type compared to the other ice princesses.
Right, which
I think, is a problematic
and
term.
I think it's something that we should also address is black people in general, black women, you know, fall into this.
That, like, that's something that Retta said. She was like, I saw a girl who was built like me. She was shorter, she had thicker legs, she was very muscular.
You're built like, and black women, black people tend to be pretty, like, have the potential to be pretty muscular. So even though they're not talking about her race, and even though, like, a lot of, you know, white women, especially ones with, like, gymnastics backgrounds, could have that kind of body shape and build, you're not talking about her race, but you are. It's the same thing that Missy Copeland, the ballerina, she got that all the time, she's too muscular.
She's too muscular. And that was something for Retta that really resonated with her, that she was seeing, you know, as she said, she was like, I saw a little black girl like me. And, like, that was built like her, that could do amazing things. And an interesting thing that I read talked about how other young black girls didn't want to be a part of figure skating because that was something that white people were supposed to like. And if they were interested in it, they could get backlash from their peers and they could get backlash from the figure skating community.
Well, it was the same thing
with... It was a catch-22.
I mean, we've seen this happen in sports over and over again.
Exactly.
We saw it happen with Venus and Serena Williams when they went into tennis, which is a traditionally white sport.
Yeah. Which,
and
figure skating is so white.
It's super white.
So white.
And we saw it with Tiger Woods when he went into golfing, which is an incredibly white sport. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, we see it happen over and over again. And I do think that they, when they go into traditionally white spaces, I do think they'll be judged harsher, whether consciously or unconsciously, subconsciously.
Yeah. Well, and they're judged by both sides. They're judged by the people in their own, you know, race and ethnicity, and they're judged by the white people who don't want them to be a part of it. Even if they're claiming they're not racist, they're being racist.
Mm-hmm. I mean, until they become the best.
Exactly.
Because I remember in the 90s, it was all about the Williams sisters and, and Tiger Woods. The black community was like, hell yeah.
We already knew.
Yeah.
Well, it's interesting because, like, there was only ever one girl that I remember skating with growing up who was black. And I think there was probably more, but there's one girl I remember competing against through most of my time skating. And I went to look for her on Facebook because I wanted to, like, reach out to her and ask her some questions so that I could maybe, like, follow up on this, like, another time. Mm-hmm. And I couldn't find her anywhere. But I'm going to take another kind of moment just to touch a little bit on, like, the body image of figure skating side. We're talking about my friend JC. I was a smaller skater growing up. I had tiny little legs, which gained me the nickname the Flamingo by my coach. This made me, quote-unquote, the right body type for the sport at the time, but it by no means made me the best at my sport in my level. My good friend JC struggled with accepting her body as a young skater. JC was strong, a real spitfire. I remember competing against her for the first time when I was 10 years old and getting my ass kicked by the girl who flew around the rink, landing axels higher than the rest of the competition. She skated with the cutest smile I've ever seen. Like, this girl was, like, nuts. She skated this, like, fast song and was like, woof, 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 and, like, was daring. Like, would just fling herself in the air, where for me, I skated a little slower. I could jump, but I wasn't, like, that. JC dominated the Minnesota skating scene as a young girl and remained having crazy good jumps through her whole skating career. And I remember wanting to be like bigger and stronger like her. Like, we would do kickboxing together and we did a lot of off ice. We were both homeschooled together, and like, I wanted to have like bigger, stronger legs like she did, mm-hmm. you know, and I feel like it was slowly starting to become more accepting, but like, she would overhear people talking about her at competitions and saying things that were like not great. Like, this is showing that even when I was younger, having more of like an athletic body type was not seen as ideal, even though she was so amazing and undeniably great. She was more flexible than me. She was a faster spinner. Her artistic ability was insane. She was just great. To me, Syria and JC have a lot in common. They were both beautiful and strong athletes. Syria said in Retta's documentary, "I can be pretty too, but I can jump." Mm-hmm. So to me, I feel like those are the people that I always really looked up to because it was different than me. And because they were so, they could be beautiful and they could be delicate, yet they could be dominating mm-hmm. in their athletic ability.
I think it's an interesting thing though, because to me, that quote, I mean, while I think it's great, like, for her to acknowledge that, because I think she's got so much, like, self-love and self-confidence, it's crazy to me, though, when you think about people like Tonya Harding, who weren't necessarily interested in being beautiful, they were interested in being, like, mm-hmm. really good athletes, that women are judged, female athletes, not just in figure skating, but in, you know, tennis, in...
Well, even in general, I feel like.
In general.
We're judged on whether we're pretty or not.
You're judged on whether or not you're beautiful.
But I think when she's saying that, it's more of, like, a self-confidence thing.
No, of course.
It's like when I call someone beautiful and they're like, "Oh my God, but you're so pretty." I'm like, "I know I'm pretty, but I'm calling you pretty too."
Yeah, no, I appreciate that on, like, a self-confidence level. But I do want to address it because men don't have to be beautiful.
No.
To do well in sports.
But then again, look at Michael Phelps and all of the, like, endorsement deals he's gotten and stuff because he's good looking.
I don't think he's good looking.
A lot of people think he's good looking.
I think he's really unattractive, actually.
Oh, he's kind of cute, but whatever. I mean, he's kind of, there's parts about him that are unattractive and, like,
I don't find him good looking.
I don't have, like, a crush on him, but, like, I mean,
I don't think, yeah, to me, I feel like he's getting those endorsement deals because he's a good athlete.
Right.
I don't think he's necessarily getting them because he's
Well, then what about Ryan Lochte, whatever his name
he's
is?
He's an idiot.
Exactly.
But he doesn't have endorsement deals because he's an idiot.
He used to.
Yeah.
Because everyone was like,
but he lost them.
Yeah, he did.
No, well, and I'm not saying that that doesn't happen.
I know what you mean.
Male athletes are going to be questioned about their athleticism, right? Yeah. And they're going to be judged based on their athleticism. Whereas, like, female athletes will always get questions about what they're wearing.
Whether or
not they're wearing makeup while they're playing their sport.
What's cool is that Surya wore these, like, bodysuits, which when I was growing up, you couldn't wear, but now you can. But I think part of that maybe because she didn't wear tights, too, that she was like, I want my legs covered. Uh-huh. But I don't know. I didn't read anything about that. But she would wear these, like, bodysuits, and that was completely different than anybody else was wearing. So to kind of keep you up to date on Surya, she's kept skating a big part of her life. She's 41 years old, and she is still landing triples. At least in this article that I read, she might be a little older now.
She looks the same, too. That black don't crack.
She looks the same.
She looks exactly the same.
She's still landing triples. It's amazing. In the late 2000s, she met Peter Biver, a Minnesota skater, and I wrote, I swear to you, I didn't know this when I started reading about her. But apparently, Biver was part of a Paris team of one of the girls that I, like, competed against my whole life's older sister, who I've grown up with. And my coach knows both of them, which blows my mind. They were like, oh, yeah, she has such a great sense of humor. And I'm like, what? I need to meet her. And they're both coaches in Minnesota now, and her husband actually was a coach at the St. Paul Figure Skating Club, which is where I trained, which is bonkers to me. So here are some of her overall career accomplishments. She's one of the most decorated skaters of all time. She's 3-time world silver medalist, 9-time French national champion, and 5-time European champion.
Wow.
What the fuck?
Yeah.
Like, that's bonkers. I'm going to touch briefly on black figure skating. Because before Surya, there was Mabel Fairbanks, who was the trailblazer of all of this. She was the first African-American woman inducted into the U.S. Figure Skating Hall of Fame at the age of 82, although she was never allowed to practice on sessions with other people or participate in competitions. She began the first integrated skating school.
I feel like we should address that that's inducted.
Shut the fuck up. And I was thinking that when I wrote it, I was like, should I call it inducted just to, like, make fun of myself?
Because indicted is, it's so funny.
It doesn't look like it, Keegan.
I know. Sorry. Bitch. Sorry. I'm sorry. We'll cut that out.
No, keep it. I like it. Okay. It says, Fairbanks had to... Oh my god, I'm like reading this in my own handwriting on graph paper that I've written in purple ink and then highlighted in pink. Fairbanks had to circumvent the segregation that barred her entry to practice rinks in all U.S. competitions, so she developed her own ice shows and performed mostly black audiences in Manhattan before becoming a coach who worked with some of the earliest black figure skaters, Babylonia and Thomas. So these are two other skaters that were kind of like known as the first black figure skaters. There was Ty Babylonia, who was half Filipino, and she identified as mixed race. And she didn't really bring up any sort of racial issues, and neither did Debbie Thomas. Debbie Thomas didn't like to be seen as a black skater. She just wanted to be seen as a skater. It was something that they very much had to repress, which I think was because at the time that was what you were supposed to do a little bit, you know, I'm colorblind, oh, there's this, and I think that they just didn't want to be, no, I agree. I just feel like they were probably just like, I don't want to be a part of this narrative, but something that's interesting is that Mabel Fairbanks was their coach, and she shielded them from discrimination, because Debbie Thomas talks about how she never received any blatant racism, people calling me the N-bomb or anything like that, but there were coaches that wouldn't work with her. There were times that she felt like she wasn't scored properly, and Fairbanks would
It's a more insidious form of racism, yeah.
But to her at this time, she was like, well, they've never been explicitly racist, so can I say they've been racist? And Fairbanks very much kind of like... shielded them. I think she got the brunt of a lot of it from people, and mm-hmm. she would hear what they would say, and then to kind of protect them, would tell them a different story. You know what I mean? Didn't want them to feel like they couldn't do the same things because of the people that they were that were kind of the naysayers. And another girl that I want to talk about now, who is like the up and coming badass, her name is Star Andrews. And if you guys have not watched any of her performances, you probably have without realizing it, because she went viral a few years ago for skating to I whip my hair back and forth when she was like 9 years old. I remember watching part of it and being like, what is this? But now I'm gonna go back and watch it. So she skated at nationals this year for the first time in hers in the senior category. Mm-hmm. And she didn't place, like, in the top four, but people were, like, blown away by her. She's 16 years old. She's also attempted... She's actually landed a triple axel somewhere in competition. And she skated to a cover that Beyonce did of the song Fever for her short program. Uh-huh. And then her long program, she sang a song by Whitney Houston that she sang herself.
Oh, wow.
She skated to her own music.
Yeah, that's super cool.
And she, like, brought the house down. People went nuts. And what I think is cool is that she wears for her short program a red bodysuit, which to me resembles Bonnelly.
Oh, yeah. She's probably, like, influenced.
Oh, yeah, for sure. And I think that she, like, she is the one to watch. I think in a few years, like this year for the Olympics, the girls are good. But I think in a few years when these younger girls start maturing a little bit... Mm-hmm. They're going to blow the roof off of the place. And she's astonishing. And she's, again, she's, like, breaking down barriers in skating in general, but also, I feel like, for young Black girls. And it's making it seem that, like, you don't have to look a certain way to do this sport because it's mostly white and Asian.
Yeah, that's true.
You know?
Yeah, I think representation matters.
Totally.
You know, it does matter. If you've not seen anyone like you... do something before. I mean, there is that aspect of, like, being a trailblazer and being the first to do something, but you really, it feels so empowering whenever
you know that you have a place.
Well, and to know that you can do it, like, she's doing it, and and look at her doing it, and she can influence me and make me want to do that. Yeah. Like, representation is so important. You are always searching for people who look like us to maybe give us that kind of, like, validation. Exactly. That we can do that too.
Yeah. So, and that's something for me that definitely, you know, warms my heart. It's not something that I can personally empathize with, but it's something that definitely warms my heart.
Does she do partner skating now? I swear to God, I've seen...
Ooh, the girl... Surya. Oh, I mean, she might... Well, a lot of times when they would do, like, Champions on Ice, sometimes they would do... pairs, but I think you're thinking of the other French pair team that's competing at the Olympics this year.
Okay, yeah, that's who I'm thinking of. Because I saw them do a routine
to... Their short program the other night?
No, I've not been watching them.
Oh. What?
I don't care. I'm not gonna lie. I don't care about the Olympics.
Oh my God, don't say that to
me. I'm sorry. I just don't care. I don't care about sports. Like, I could watch figure skating, but I'll wait.
But that's what I'm talking about.
Yeah. But, girl. No, I do like watching figure skating. I like watching gymnastics, but I'm kind of like, I'm not going to take... I also don't have any time. I'm also very busy.
I'm just going to send you videos.
Yes, do that. See, that's the best way for me to consume things.
Okay.
Because I saw a video of, they were doing a routine to Sound of Silence. Ooh. It was so good. Like, I think
was
I shared it.
Was it two Black...
No, it was one Black woman and a white man.
Yeah, so that's the same team. Because there was another pair of... There was a Black pair that was, like, the first Black pair ever. Like, in 2010, there was a bunch of stuff. I have no... Again, okay, I left all of my handwritten notes at home, and I had all this shit written down.
That's okay.
But there was another... But there was a Black pair team. I believe they were American, but it's been a lot of French.
Yeah.
But, yeah, it's amazing. And there's a... You know, the pair that we were just talking about are in the Olympics this year. I watched their short program. It wasn't great.
I haven't heard a lot of buzz about, like, American skaters. Like, I've heard a lot of buzz about...
The male, Nathan Chen.
Oh, yeah. Okay, yeah.
He's the new quad king. He's good. The male skaters we have... The female skaters is a girl who can land a triple axel, but she's never landed.
Right, but they don't really have any, like, stars. Like,
that's
I haven't
what I'm
seen
saying.
Any,
is,
like,
right now,
ice
there's no.
Stars.
Well, Ashley Wagner was, but she didn't get picked.
Gymnastics has kind of, like, there are tons of, like, gymnast stars who are, like, you
know. Well, Ashley Wagner was kind of that, but right now it's more the male skating because, as I'm going to talk about in the news segment, which is going to be posted before this episode, so it's weird, but I'm going to talk about Adam Rippon, who is the first openly gay Olympic athlete.
Oh, cool.
So he's in the men's category, as well as Nathan Chen, who can complete an absurd amount of quads per program, but he fucking bombed the first short program. But he has three more programs to go, so we have hope for Nathan. I love him.
I don't know what any of that means. I'm not gonna lie to you.
Girl,
I'm not gonna lie to you.
Well, you're about to learn. So that's what I learned about Surya. I wrote, like, 7 pages of notes, and there's so much more, but that's the basics that you need to know. She is amazing. I mean, she set up a platform for female and male skaters and for Black skaters and for skaters who come from a lower class bracket and, like, just
breaking barriers.
Overall.
Knocking down walls.
knocking down walls, overall, just amazing. And now that I know I have somewhat of something in common, I hope that one day I'll get to meet her. And
I'm sure you will if you make that, you know, a priority, if you want to. I'm sure that they would introduce you, you know what I mean?
Oh my God, I would love to. I mean, I've always known about her. There's actually an episode of Will and Grace, I think it's called Will on Ice, because I was reading about it too, where they talk about her a lot, where Jack and Grace are like, oh my God, yes, we have to go to Champions
League. Oh, I saw that episode.
Yeah, and they're like waiting for her to do the backflip, and Grace like puts her head down. She's like, did I miss it?
Yeah, I've seen that episode. That's funny. Yeah. I just watched that like not too long ago. I've been rewatching Will and Grace.
Oh, fucking love Grace. But yeah, like she was like, that's what she was known for. I remember going to Champions on Ice when I was little and seeing her do backflips when I was, you know,
that's cool.
7 years old. And yeah, it was amazing. I'm glad that I have like those memories. I think I have a book somewhere of like a big, like centerfold kind of thing of her.
That's cool.
She's the best.
Well, thank you for sharing.
Yeah. I hope that
stuff I didn't know.
Yeah. I hope that you guys want to like learn more about her and some of these other like amazing Black skaters, because they're so underestimated and underrepresented.
Yeah,
like, they're just not talked about enough. And definitely with her, I mean, she competed in the same year that Tara Lipinski won the Olympics and that Michelle Kwan got second. She competed against Oksana Baiul, an amazing skater. And, you know, Yuko Sato, like I was talking about, from Japan, an amazing skater. So I think a lot of times she was downplayed and really portrayed in the media in a negative way, especially after she took that medal off. Watch that video. We just try to post that, too, because it's an amazing video.
Right. I think, but she knew her worth. You know what
she
I mean?
She did.
She wasn't going to let anybody tell her that she didn't deserve what she deserved. Well, actually, I wanted to address that. We touched on this a little bit earlier, but Madigan has created our Twitter account. So if you want to follow us on Twitter, I don't know what it is. I feel like my brain is set up for Twitter. Like, my brain is set up for, like, one or two sentences of something funny to, like, get it out there. Like, that's what I use Facebook for.
Oh, I used to be obsessed.
You know, but there is some kind of block somewhere in my brain where I'm just like, at this point, it's like a pride thing. I'm like, I am not getting on Twitter. I'm not gonna do it.
I don't even know how to use it anymore, so I'm still kind of learning, but I don't think we have any followers.
But if, we do. Yeah.
We have three followers.
Okay.
Well. Best Life Notes, Isaac Brinker giving y'all shout outs, and Gary Joseph Show. Oh, it's a podcast. That's cool. But the other ones are totally spam.
But yeah, if you want to follow us on there, it's part of why I hate
it's
fucking yamped. Twitter.
Okay, it was all the Angry Neighborhood Feminist or anything close to that was too long. So
I hate Twitter.
YANF podcast.
Right. Okay.
YANF podcast.
So go ahead and hit Madigan up on that, because I am not checking that. But
and I'm gonna do my best to be more active with it. And
so if you want to follow us there, you can follow us there. We also have, I'd say we're most active on Instagram.
Yeah.
Our Instagram is Angry Neighborhood Feminist. If you want to send us an email, it's neighborhoodfeminist@gmail.com. And I have that in the show notes. I've started putting that in the show notes. So you can actually click on that link if you're using like Apple Podcasts.
And I've really, really enjoyed getting feedback from people.
Yeah,
so
it's been
cool.
If you
guys have anything positive, or I don't want to say negative, but you know, if you have constructive criticism for us.
Or just feedback in general.
Yeah, I totally applaud. In reference to these episodes, if you guys have anything that you want to share with us or stories that you want us to tell that are anywhere near these, I think I would love to read some stories about people who have experienced similar things. If you're a young Black skater, or if you have a story like that, or about just being an outsider in general, like, I think that that's something that we would love to
hear about. So definitely send us your stories. Just shoot us a line. We'll definitely read it. And probably read it on air if you want.
Yeah.
On air.
We're on air. Right now we're so unpopular that we read everything.
Someday we'll hire somebody to do that for us. But thank you for listening to us just chit-chat and share some stories. I hope you learned something.
Mm-hmm.
And we
encourage you to rage on.
Rage on? Rage on?
Are we ever going to say it together?
No. I mean, maybe.
Okay. 1, 2, 3. Rage on. I was no, doing it sounds
the, never mind. Okay, this is the most awkward sign off ever.
1, 2, 3. Rage on.
Bye.
Bye. God.